So, I guess my next question is, could somebody tell me why do we meditate? What's the point of meditation? And preferably, I'd like to hear the first years. Okay. Put up your hand if you're in the first year. Come on, Elise, put up your hand. Come on, put up your hand if you're in first year. I've got a couple of you. Do you? Okay. Could you tell me your name? What's your name? Doctor. Doctor. Why do we meditate? Tell me confident. Okay. What's your friend's name, Doctor? Her name? Why else might we meditate? Okay. Teacher, is there any more first years here that I can think of? Ah, there's one. What's your name? Pediatrician. Oh, very well. Okay. Pediatrician, why do we meditate? Why does the Buddha suggest we meditate? But it would be very pleased with you, and particularly because this is not your native language. You're able to express yourself very well still. Pediatrician, have you got any other friends in first year near you? What's your friend on the right name? What's her name? Architect. So, pediatrician was talking about awareness. So, how did the Buddha find awareness to be of help? And if we empty our mind, there's nothing to see. Okay. So, what did the Buddha use meditation to do or to achieve? Know a little bit about his life, Architect? Architect, who's the person of the name? And who's the person on your right? Their name? Pharmacist. So, how did the Buddha use meditation to develop himself? I'd better ask some of the third years. Have we got anybody from third year in here? Who's in third year? What's your name?
Scientist.
Okay. So how did the Buddha use meditation to develop himself?
He used meditation to gain awareness of the truth of reality.
Are there any fourth years here? Did I miss you out? Are you third year too? Or?
Master.
Oh, Masters. Okay, Masters. What's your name?
Project Manager.
Project Manager. Oh, fabulous. Okay, Project Manager. Tell me, on the night of the Buddha's enlightenment, what did the, what happened? Do you know Project
Manager?
Wisdom. So what's wisdom in Project Manager?
To understand that anything can change and unstable.
project manager, remember? Budget, schedule, actually set. What about those things, project manager? What's wisdom? How do you apply wisdom to the doctrine of teaching, architecting, pediatrician? How do we apply wisdom to those people? Can you understand a bit more? Okay, project manager, who's on your right? Aerospace engineer, what's wisdom?
In Buddhist, I have wisdom in general means the teaching of the Buddha. And wisdom contains a lot of stuff, so it depends on the different context wisdom.
Okay, so if I'm a Christian, I have one type of wisdom, and if I'm a Buddhist, I have another type of wisdom, and if I'm an atheist, I have another type of wisdom. Is that right? So am I going to aim for Saturn or Pluto or Jupiter? Where am I going for wisdom? Tough question. Okay, Mr. Aerospace Engineer, who's on your right?
Mechanical engineer.
Well, this is getting close to my heart. What wisdom applies to most people regardless of their philosophy? What is right and what is wrong? Now I'm still looking for my answer. What happened to the Buddha on the night of the enlightenment? What's your name?
Meteorologist.
Did you happen to know what happened to the Buddha on the night of the enlightenment? The
village.
Yeah. Or he visited something in the village. And what happened? I think that might be in the morning, but not on the evening. You told about the Buddha's enlightenment? So, what happened on the night? I should be there now. Meteorology was a very important part of the Buddha's enlightenment, because we're told that the Buddha was near a river, and he was sitting under Ficus religiosa, the Bodhi tree, and that provided some cooling for him. And it was in springtime. Springtime, what's nice about spring, girls? What's nice about spring? Wow, that's right. Because there's lots of embellishments to the story of the Buddha's enlightenment about flowers appearing. Well, it was springtime, so it'd be fairly normal for the flowers to appear. So, he's sitting near a river, and it was quite cool. So we say, in the first stage of the watch of the night, the Buddha's enlightenment, the Buddha sat and meditated, and he saw, was able to see, able to recollect his past life in detail. He saw who he was, the families he was with, what he did, and so on. coming back to you now? Is it coming back to you now? The night of Buddha's enlightenment? Okay. So what did I ask you to draw? I'm sorry? The reason I asked you to draw a picture of yourself when you were learning to walk is because that's a bit beyond most of your memory. Remember, but the Buddha could remember when he learned to call, and he could remember a bit further. And we're told he remembered his past lives in detail. So this is what I was hoping you to think about. So I'm sure, pediatrician, you're aware that babies can remember when they were still in the womb. I know from my daughter, who used to call her Toki, which is the Korean name for fetus. And 2 weeks after she was born, I said, "How are you, Toki?" And she made a very visible reaction to remembering that name. So we can remember all these things, but can we go back a bit further than when we were born, like the Buddha did? So on the second watch of the night, the Buddha cast his mind a bit further, and he was able to see his friends and relatives and other people being in their past lives and their relationships and their actions and the results of their actions. And from the second watch of the night then came the third watch of the night, where he was able to realise exactly what our mechanical engineer has talked to us about, the aspect of right and wrong, the aspect of those people who had the intention of creating suffering found that suffering came back to him. So this is why I asked you to draw a picture of yourself when you were younger, just to try and help see if you could remember a bit further. So I should put a lecture on this, shouldn't I? Do you want it?
No.
Oh, okay. Alright. So shall I call you counsellor or?
Yeah.
Okay, Councillor, would you be kind enough to show us your picture when you were learning to walk? Okay, so when you go walking meditation, when you do walking meditation with Queen Protection Dharma Officer next time, think about the fact that you are able to walk because we have balance and we learn. But we didn't always know how to walk. We used to crawl. And maybe you can remember something more from that. Okay, thank you, Councillor. Alright, so what I'd like to do next is I'm going to talk about a little bit more about Buddhist education. Then I'm going to talk about retail therapy activities. Then I'm going to talk about retail therapy measurement of status, and then I'm going to talk about retail therapy measure of satisfaction, and then I'm going to talk about retail therapy politics, if we've got time. Okay, so just a bit of background. I've been teaching classes maybe 10, between 10 and 15, maybe something like a bit bigger. Students at the monastery, they're between 11 and 14 and 15. So I used to come here and as the English Dharma officer back all those years ago, and I used to see the adults and the university people talk, and I would assimilate what they said. And then I would, many years later, I was asked to say, well, I want to take these classes for young people and talk to them about the Buddhist teachings and make them aware of the relevance of the teachings to their lives. So teenagers are quite fun to work with. They've always got lots of logical questions about, if you don't explain things right, they immediately put up their hand. Nobody's put up their hand yet, nurse, I don't know why. I guess I'm saying all the right things, am I? Okay, so they're allowed to put up their hand though. Do you know that, nurse? Yes. Okay. So in terms of explanation, even 15 years ago when I did start teaching the Buddhism class, there wasn't much in the way that I could give the young people that was in English. So it's quite a battle to try and structure things for them to understand how can we teach them the Dharma and get them to appreciate it and have some affinity to it because they live in a different culture. So that's been quite a challenging role, and Alan was kind enough to, correction, the scientist was kind enough to come to the class this year and get bombarded with questions from teenagers about, well, what is suffering? How does that apply to us? You know, we live a pretty good life. One of the topics we talk to the students about is the Buddha's life itself. And then we try and compare the Buddha's life with your life. For example, I'm sure some of you have got a garden. Did anybody proud of their garden? Did anybody like to put up their hand and say, I have a lovely garden, you can come and see it, it's yours? Nobody's got a garden? Okay. Well, that's a bit disappointing, really. Right, the reason I say that is because, as you know, Prasiddhartha, when the Buddha was young, his mother died a week after he was born. And his father was extremely concerned about losing his son, particularly with predictions made for his son at the time. And so there was, despite the fact that he supposedly had the best students in northern India teaching at the time, he still remembers not being taught about old age or about death or about sickness or about religious philosophy. And there were three palaces, or what we describe as palaces, that the Buddha lived in, or the Siddhartha lived in. And he used to talk about the fact that no unsightly things were left in the garden. For example, nurse, do you like agapanthus? What are they? Agapanthus.
With really large leaves, like almost giant blades of grass.
Yes, that's right. They're from South Africa, they've been promoted here. Everybody likes agapanthus. Now, I can just imagine that if I've just used agapanthus as an example, not because I love native botany, which I do, but everybody can relate to agapanthus. Now, in the Buddha's time, his father made a point of ensuring that when the agapanthus died off, after flowering, all the dead matter would be removed. So he'd only see them looking at their best. So in this way, he wouldn't be feel sad about why the things go through the cycle. So of course, in your lives too, you look outside and you're looking around the university here, and once again, all the trees, all the shrubs, all the grass, it's kept at its time. You don't see death around the university, it's kept from you. Speak up if you don't agree with me, please.
The leaves fall,
yes, and what happens to them immediately after that? Someone rushes along and picks them all up so you don't see them.
They're left in piles.
They're left in piles.
Yeah.
Okay. So the point I'm trying to make here is your lives are a bit like the Buddha's lives. Are there any other comparisons we can make? Well, there are lots of comparisons we can make. How our culture has developed, and perhaps even with the knowledge, you can all be enlightened. Is that possible, Nurse? Could all these people be enlightened? Yeah. Okay. But then they'd have to have wisdom, wouldn't they? But our astrophysicist, correction, our aeronautical engineer, aerospace engineer, hasn't quite decided whether wisdom applies to all of us or not. So we're going to come back to that. All right, so we better get on to retail therapy, because I know, you know, I can see some credit cards quivering under the table here. So, retail therapy. What is retail therapy about? Retail therapy is when we go shopping. So let's think about when we go shopping. Now, who haven't I picked on yet? Mr. Meteorologist, who's on your left? Oh, can you figure out who you are, Mr. Meteorologist? Who is Mr. Meteorologist? Mr. Meteorologist? This is very appropriate. Okay. So, retail therapy is where we go shopping, isn't it? And does it apply, when does it apply to people? In what situations are we involved in actual retail therapy as opposed to just shopping?
When you're depressed.
When you're depressed?
Yeah. Like
something
upsetting you?
Oh, is something upsetting you?
No, sometimes when stuff upsets me, I want to go shopping.
Oh. Put up your hand if you made your own lunch today. If you made your own lunch today, right up. Okay, so all those other people, you didn't make your lunch and you had a bit of retail therapy, did you? Is that right?
Hang on, but we had to buy the ingredients to make our own lunch, so technically we engaged in that too, right?
Yes, I suppose so, but it's quite a bit different. So when we think about retail therapy, why is it that we perhaps aren't making our own lunch the way we used to, or that's, I suppose, like in the old days when I was your age, do we enjoy our lunches being prepared by somebody else better than making them ourselves?
Sometimes it's more convenient.
If you were to make your lunch, would you enjoy it as much as if you bought it from the counsellor here or from the nurse here?
I enjoy it more if I make it my own.
You enjoy it more if you make it your own? Okay. What about you? What's your name?
Your lunch
today?
No.
You've made your own lunch, did you?
No.
per the introduction for the talk, was talked about in the 1980s in Chicago and watching all the people do their shopping for Christmas. And it actually talked about a specific group of people that seem to gain great satisfaction from shopping. I don't know whether they're all depressed. I think Christmas is supposed to be, you know, sort of uplifting. However, they were going off to the shops and they were buying lots of things. Now, I'm actually a part owner of a surf shop in Manly, and I don't manage the shop myself, but my partner runs it, and he has quite a lot of customers coming in, as well as surfboards, as well as fashion items. And the location of the shop is sort of towards the hill end, where there's lots of rather wealthy people living. And my friend, who is a male, is a very good talker, and he often says to me, well, I've had some people come in and they look like they wanted to buy some fashion clothes and so on, and he will talk to them. And he said sometimes it appears as though the customers do show relief after buying something. And by that description, I mean, I presume that they feel not only satisfied with what they've purchased, but they have some satisfaction in the process of making the transaction. And my friend is, of course, always very happy to make the transaction. But is he helping you? Or are we going to the shops because this person, I'm a customer, this person is going to talk to me, and I'm going to be accorded a lot of respect because, you know, I've got money in my pocket, and I like that sort of respect that comes from having money in my pocket. And so the transactions can be made, and the shopkeeper, this businessman over there, this millionaire down here, will be very happy, but I'm not sure whether he might be even more depressed. I'm not sure. So there are lots of stories about, I'm sorry guys, but particularly females who might go to shops and who might seek out a favourite salesman or particular items within the shop and buy them again and again and again. And sometimes if you visit your friend's houses, who of course will remain nameless, and you look around their living room or their kitchen, you will see a disturbingly high pile of things that were obviously on sale at a multitude of shops. So what can we say about the intentions that we need to purchase at those times, and how does that relate to Buddhism? Mr. Aerospace Engineer, who's the person in front of you?
Peter.
So what can we say about what is happening to someone that feels the need to buy things more than what their family require or what they can use, and what emotions and what awareness are they not having? Is the price a driver, the fact that is that the driver? Is it control? Is it feeling of success when I control the transaction, particularly if I can get a discount. How much does the discount help satisfy you after your purchase? Or is it just the big
red? Well, if I stuff on like full price and can get it on discount. I time my shopping spree based on sales. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I think everyone would.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of satisfaction that you think you've cheated the system.
Yeah.
I the RRP.
But if you get stuff on discount, it's like everybody would have them.
Well, that's why it's pretty superficial, but.
So is cost the same as value? So if you get it cheaper than somewhere else, is it the same value as perhaps another shop, so in terms of vegetables, or in terms of fruit, or in terms of clothes, and so on? And you say that when you're depressed, you...
But when I'm happy, I will survive. Well, you use the term retail therapy. Like, that's generally related to, like, you know, when you're sad or down, you want to go shopping. Otherwise, I'd call it shopping.
Well, the literature actually says that some females like to shop more when they're happy, and sometimes they like to shop more when they're sad. And sometimes, in fact, one of the stories I was reading was this mother's daughter had shifted in the state. So she thought she'd buy her daughter a little gift, as mothers do, and she went down to the shopping mall and was looking around for a little gift for her daughter. So she just popped in and made a transaction, had her with a lovely jacket. It was a bit above her sort of budget, but anyway, she couldn't find the store for her daughter, but at least she got a jacket for herself. So then, of course, the next day she had to go out again and go shopping and think, well, I've still got to get my daughter something. So I think there's one of those stores, you know, those little porcelain figurines that I could get my daughter, and at the other Marina Mall perhaps, and the lady went off there and she bought some dresses and jumped to the side, and it wasn't sun yet, and she thought, well, I could just probably get these in too, and I can't see that porcelain store at all. So sometimes these things happen. So how can we relate that to those characteristics of feeling the need to work at sales, and how does that relate to Buddhism? Can anybody tell me what we might discuss in relation to retail therapy with what the Buddha might talk to us about? Now, I think the aerospace engineer, one of them was talking about it. Oh, that's right, the accountant. The accountant was sitting here. She was talking about it. So what would the Buddha say in terms of human mental retail therapy? Has anybody got any problems that I would need to direct to the counsellor here at all? No, that's good, because we're not sort of in that mode tonight. The Buddha would talk about awareness, and he would talk about, are we aware of what we are wanting to do and what we are doing? Are we aware of our breathing? The accountant talked about when we get up in the morning, what are we aware of? Now I know you're all city folk. Anybody hear any birds this morning? Who said yes? What's your name? Finance director. Finance director, what bird did you hear this morning? Do is ask some of the girls here about whether or not we can have awareness of the transaction when we're shopping. So shopping, it's a bit like learning to walk, really. Because when we walk into a shop, all of a sudden somebody likes us. They want to meet us. They say, "You're a customer, you can make my day. All you got to do is spend, and I'm looking forward to you, and I'll give you all the attention you want, just as long as you keep that money coming out of your pocket." Now, I guess it's something we all learned from a young age, that we want to develop ourselves, we want to gain maturity, and we have been encouraged to take control. We want to take control, don't we, Mr. Dharma Officer?
Yes.
We'd like to take control. We'd like to get past our exams, wouldn't we, Nurse?
Yeah.
We'd like to make our pile of money, wouldn't we, Mr. Millionaire?
Of course.
So, we need control. So, of course, when we're shopping, there are all these things at play when we walk into the store and someone says, "Look at that guy's wallet. Wow. We've got lots of things. Him." So how are we going to keep him in control, but just sort of get a few pennies out of his pocket? How can we help him? So when we go in the store, we're thinking, maybe we've come into the store, the fruit's better, there's the for sale signs there, discount 50% off. And we're thinking, the larder was looking pretty bare, and I'm asking, you know, all my friends around next week, and really, you never know what I could find in the shop, really, and maybe the salesperson is interested in me, and maybe there's things in the shop that I want, and I've got the money, so I can choose whether I'm going to be in control or not. Is that right, Alan? So, I get my wallet out, and I check, is there any money in it? Oh, there's something in it. Right, I can go shopping. And I go to the store and I look at things over here that I might like, but which one should I take? So, how is the salesperson going to approach me? Mr. Businessman, how are you going to approach me?
Oh no.
Some of you do work in sales part time, because I know lots of you do have part time jobs, is that right? Is that right?
But not in retail.
Well, what's the matter with retail? So they might say, what do you want? But hopefully they'll be a little bit more subtle these days, because people don't like direct questions like that. They like to communicate with you on another level. I mean, they're aware of your personalities. They've done their Buddhist course already. They're thinking, I'm here to help people. That's what the Buddha said. I'm here to help you as much as you would like. How much money have you got? So, you know, my time is good. So what I need to do is, I'm a Buddhist and I'm a salesperson and I'm here to help you, is to communicate with you on another level. Now, you're all aware of this other level. It's the level where we say, I actually know your real name, nurse. And do you remember the old days, nurse? You know, back in my class and so on and so forth. She's starting to warm up. And you're starting to warm up. You're thinking, I wonder what I'm going to buy in this store. This person is really feeding me, letting me think, I'm the boss. I'm in control, I think. So I know, Mr. Businessman, you will be going to some sales courses, and they'll be talking about retail motivation, customer motivation, and the Buddhist idea of, we want to help our customers. We'd like to help them so that they don't bring suffering to themselves, but more to the point, we hope they don't bring suffering to us. So we want them to spend. And Mr. Businessman, you know, we're going to try and take advantage of them as much as we can, really, aren't we? Because we need to be helping them and ourselves. So, for those that are in retail therapy, we talk to you, we try and get your awareness at another level. And we'd like to make you think you're in control, you're the boss, and you can have anything you want. And we can satisfy you. And then make the transaction. But the Buddha said, actually, we're not in control. Are we in control or not in control? We weren't in control. Right. We're in control of our mind, aren't we? And actions. You're always in control of your mind and your actions?
Not always, but we can be.
We can be changing it. Okay. If I get boring, you won't fall asleep, will you? Can you control yourself? You can. Okay. Well, sometimes the Buddha said that we're not in control. We're here today, and you look at me, and I'm the dog bloke. But I can remember when I was just as lovely as the nurse here, so many years ago. But I have no control. I'm changing. And you're changing. And sometimes we might go to the shop and say, really, I don't think I'm in control. I think the salesman has got me by the long and the curlies. Have you heard that expression before? Well, it's when he sort of bends over and sort of, yes, how much have you got in your wallet? Oh, yes, just that amount. That's when he's got you by the long and the curlies. And you're thinking, well, really, I'd like to. They're such a nice person. But do we have awareness? Do we have awareness for what we need in life, for the people that we have to take responsibility for? Most of you don't have too many other responsibilities other than not to spend too much of your parents' money, I guess. Is that right? Okay. So we might be thinking, well, this person is such a nice salesperson and they've approached us well, and really it isn't such a bad cup at all, and well, maybe just open some from the other one, and so on. So we can go on from there. So if we are aware, we'll be thinking, how is this person approaching us? And how are their needs greater than ours? Because we like to say yes. Task people like you to say yes, and they'll ask you questions to say yes. You'll be saying yes, but you won't be thinking you're in control, perhaps. Do you always feel in control? You don't feel in control.
Oh, yes,
do
you?
Yes.
No. I feel like I'm very easily influenced by people.
Oh.
But just in terms of the shopping bit, I don't get influenced by people.
You don't.
That is just me and how much I want the item. Generally, I don't get swayed by salespeople. I find them annoying.
Yeah, that's why
I'd rather just browse myself. I don't want to talk to people when I'm shopping.
That's right. Just
business
and keep an eye on these two. Is there anybody else that doesn't actually know? Talking to those horrible salespeople in the store. Oh, there's crowds of you.
I sometimes just talk to them so that I can get a better discount.
Okay. So is it really because the salespeople are so pesky and you're afraid? Are you afraid of them? Are you afraid talking to them? Or are they going to waste your time more than you want to waste their time? Why do you like going online more? Because you can't see how something will look on you with clothes and so on. Why do you like going shopping online?
Well, I just like shopping
online
because there are people
that
are trying to push the sales and, you know, you want to design your own
online. What do you think? Most salespeople would say, we never push the customer, we just leave them. We leave them, they're always
lost.
Yes.
That's
right.
I know, but just on the customer side, it does get annoying.
Right. Well, in terms of Buddhism, obviously, what do we say? We say, well, if someone has a problem, then being aware of it is the first stage to trying to solve it, but we want to go on and talk about some other things. Now, Mr. Councillor, who's the lady behind you? What's her claim to fame?
Oh, teacher.
Now, tell me, teacher, how many shopping bags do you need to live a week?
One.
You only do one lot of shopping a week, and that can sustain you for a week. Is that a shopping trolley or is that a bag? A big bag. Okay. Teacher, do you sometimes shop with your parents?
In
your banking? Right. And when you're back home with your family, how many shopping bags does it take to satisfy your family back home?
Five.
Five big ones?
Yeah, five big ones.
And of those five big ones, how much is fully used? Your parents eat half of it.
No, my dog.
Oh, your dogs?
Yeah.
Oh, you've got lots of dogs. Oh. Okay. Well, that's all right. I suppose some of you, they're our friends, aren't they? And they get hungry too. And we need to look after them if we want to have their loyalty and support. Is that right? What are your dogs' names, teacher?
Pig and
Right. Okay. So some of you are still not yet at the age where you might measure your Christmases by the number of shopping bags you're able to stagger home with. But I guess when you get to the next phase in life, when you begin to have families and so on, you'll be looking more closely at the shopping bags and thinking, has Mr. Dharma Officer got more shopping bags than Mr. Millionaire, or has the accountant got more shopping bags than the mechanical engineer? So I can sort of more proudly. So what can we talk about that in terms of what do we want to achieve from life? Do we need to have one shopping bag each, or do we need five shopping bags worth of goods on a visit? It's sometimes hard to know how much should we participate in retail therapy, because when we participate in retail therapy, we're providing jobs for lots of other people. But are we providing useless jobs, or are we providing very worthwhile jobs that provide employment and some way for which the rest of the community can participate? So you guys are studying all sorts of subjects, and you need to make up your minds about how much shopping do I need to do, what should I be aware of when I'm going shopping, and so on. So perhaps we could talk about a little bit about the politics of shopping. So in some countries, as you know, we don't like people to have much individual initiative, Mr. Councillor. We don't want them to have any initiative. We will tell you what you need to do, and we will tell you where you need to work, and if there's something you've done wrong, well, we'll regulate society and we'll keep you in certain positions within society. And if you're a menial type person, don't think about trying to become any other type of person. So I would like to hear from you what your views on the politics of retail therapy might be in a broader sense. Mr. Aeronautical Engineer, who's on your left for you?
Project manager.
What do you think about the politics of retail therapy on a broader scale? I was thinking more about the politics of retail therapy in terms of, do we want our community to have the opportunity to go into the shops and say yes or no, or, and does this also mean they have the opportunity to do lots of other things in society, or should we be regulating society more so people can't do retail therapy? There should be no opportunity for them to be able to complain about retail therapy. What do you think, Project Manager? Have a chance to make a decision. Okay, so Mr. Physicist, who's that fellow behind you? Agreeing. What's his...
I don't know.
A dropout. I'll just call you the dropout, shall I? Okay. So, do you know much about Buddhism? What should you know? Okay. What's right or wrong in Buddhism?
Killing is wrong. Lying is wrong. Taking intoxicants are wrong.
The five things you've got to do. Okay. Is that enough to guide you on the way?
What? I hope so.
Okay. So, what I was trying to explore was the idea of, would the Buddha encourage society to have lots of opportunities for retail therapy, or not many opportunities for retail therapy?
Oh. I don't think the Buddha would ever answer to the question.
Not during
the time that I wasn't really shopping. I guess anything that is, it really depends on the individual. It can be good or it can be bad. You just gotta find the middle. You just gotta find the middle path.
The middle path.
Yeah, go for shopping, but don't be too greedy.
Window shopping.
Oh, yeah. No, but I personally don't like shopping. So, shopping therapy has never really helped me.
Well, in conclusion, what will we say about whether shopping therapy helps Buddhists? Does shopping therapy help Buddhists? So we have to define a number of terms, don't we? We have to define shopping therapy and what Buddhist is. Yes,
I think shopping therapy doesn't help anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because say if it's just even a normal person who shops, because they're sad. After they shop, they would have a lot of items, but they're all superficial. They're still sad because it's just something, it's like Panadol. It's something that just covers up.
Yes.
I think that shopping is actually shopping therapy is actually making you aware. If we are talking from the view of this, it's making you aware. Is the item a necessity or it is not? That it become an excessive item, it becomes an extravagant. So, you know, so you are actually like buying more than what you needed. I mean, the shopping, not the grocery shopping.
Yes,
retail,
yes.
Shopping, retail shopping.
Yes.
So you are actually buying more than what you need.
Yes.
So if you are talking about the police, if you can afford to buy more than what you need, you should have that extra money, you should have given the money to help others, not into the shopping.
Okay, so anybody, Mr. Millionaire, is that all right? If she gives the money to help others but not into the shop?
my dad told me that if anyone is to be rich, the first thing they need to learn is how to save.
How to save?
How to save money.
Right. So they can't have any retail therapy if they've got to save all the time. Ooh, okay.
What about the Oxfam store? Then I'm helping people with my retail therapy. Because
you might be. Okay. So in terms of the Buddhist scriptures, there are three baskets. And the Buddha's teaching, the path down to us, in three baskets of three types of teaching. So what we're talking about really is from the Abhidharma, Vinika. And it talks a lot about the psychological parts of being aware, consciousness, where does consciousness come from, why do we have this ingrained habit of indulging in retail therapy. Some of the articles on retail therapy talk about my parents didn't spend much time with me, and they always liked to bring back things for me. And so whenever I saw my dad, he would bring me some toys or some new clothes. And my relationship with my father is to see him with new clothes, and then off he'd fly again, or off he'd go to work. So when I grew up, I thought that the way we relate to other people was just by buying stuff, because my father didn't really talk very much to me, and that's why I have problems in buying things and then having to hide them from my husband, or having to run away from the credit card company, and so on and so forth. So, and the Abhidharma talks a bit more in depth about psychological bases for things happening and so on, but Mr. Counselor, we can't really help people in this session with their problems to retail therapy. What we can say is the Buddha was very keen for you to live your lives in happiness and to see the agapanthus flowering, but not when they're dead. He wanted you to avoid suffering by being aware of what you were doing and being aware of the other people. His first call was something in terms of wisdom. Wisdom is making decisions and creating actions that cause the least amount of suffering for ourselves and other sentient beings. That's a pretty sort of general definition of wisdom that should be able to be applied across religions. Do you think, Mr. Aerospace Engineer? Is that a reasonable definition of wisdom? Creating actions and making decisions that cause the least amount of suffering for ourselves and others? We like not to create suffering for ourselves. We like not to create suffering for other people. So often, in terms of making a decision, we decide where is the suffering going to come, who's going to get most of it. Can we avoid it? Can we push it away? What can we do? So throughout your weeks at university, when you see each other, you'd say, oh, look, let's do some retail therapy. You've got some money on you, haven't you, Mr. Physicist? I'd like a coffee, please. So these are the ways in which you can think about how can I use my teachings of the Buddha this week and so on. All right. Well, I think probably Kendrick is wanting to wrap up soon, so I better give you a test. So I'm afraid it's not a very fair test, because it is an open book test, because you can open your books if you brought any. But what I'd like to know is, because, as I say, I'm involved in education with young teenagers, and I always like to know, they're always asking me questions and I'm trying to help them understand that more. What I'd like to do is, if you could write down what are the four noble truths. Okay? Just, if you know that word, I'd just like you to write it on your on the back of the sheet later, what are the four noble truths. So this is one of the primary teachings the Buddha gave. So I know, because sometimes you come to these talks and you get a fairly unstructured talk. This was fairly unstructured. And then you think, if I went home and I talked to my friend, or I talked to my brother's friend, what could I say about Buddhism? I don't know, the guy just stood there and laughed at us or something. So, would you be able to write down the Four Noble Truths, please? You're looking a bit puzzled. What planet am I on?
Earth?
Yeah,
cause of time.
There's
a wave.
Oh, yeah.
No.
No, this one.
The end of something. This is the end of something.
And then this is the way to end the
car.
Oh, wait, yeah. Okay, boss, come out the front. All right, so boss has heard of that term before. This is one of the first things we would have talked about when he became enlightened. So this is the fundamentals of Buddhism. So just give you a little test to give you some structure to learning about Buddhism, because it's very, very deep. So, boss, are you ready to correct your neighbor's work? Okay, thank you, boss.
Okay, the Four Noble Truths. The first one is, there is suffering. Okay, and the second one is, there is a cause of suffering. And the third one is, there is an end to suffering. And the last one is, there's a way out of suffering.
Okay, so the first person that puts up their hand and says that they've just corrected some work with everything right gets an Easter egg. Anybody get... Okay.
What is your name?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, see you. There you are. Anybody else? Teacher. And what is counselor? Okay. Right, next question. One more question. What are the causes of suffering? I'd like to write this down now. What are the causes of suffering?
Cool. Many.
Yeah, you switch paper back.
Huh?
This is the second question. What are the causes of suffering?
Greed, division,
hatred. Don't know? Okay. Well, I'll give a... Yes, I want university answers, all right? You're all university students. What are the causes of suffering? It's really tough. It's a tough one, I know. What are the causes of suffering? Right, I'll just ask you for the general answer, not the master's answer. Thank you. Okay, I'd like our ascetic to come out. Our ascetic to come out the front, please.
Who's that?
I prefer not to call him Dropout. The Buddha was actually a dropout.
Oh, yeah.
Good then.
Okay. So, time's up. Time's up. So, in terms of what causes suffering, thank you, Mr. Ascetic.
Okay, I say that the main causes of suffering is greed, anger, jealousy, hatred. Basically, I think emotions and feelings, unawareness of your feelings, or unawareness of negative emotions cause suffering.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ascetic. Alright, so you can tick yourself whether you were able to get that. So the Buddha talked about Four Noble Truths, life is suffering. Why is life suffering? Well, we have the cause of suffering. What's the cause of suffering? Greed, anger, delusion, hatred. And what situations do we find suffering? Birth is suffering. Sickness is suffering. Old age is suffering. Death is suffering. Separation from loved ones is suffering. Not getting what we desire is suffering. And all the ills of the five attachments is suffering. And the reason why I wanted to call you all by your career names is to raise some awareness in you about the fact that who's Mr. Kittle? Well, Mr. Kittle's the president of the monastery. That's that bloke. Here I am, I'm standing right in front of you. I'm the president of the Huajang Monastery, and I'm really proud of that, Elise, I tell you. So people know me by that, and they call me Mr. Kittle, and I think, gee, that's pretty good. But we can become a bit attached to it, and when we become attached to it, and then they say, Mr. Kittle, I'm afraid, you know, we've got a bit too much of that. Sorry, we've got these nice young blokes here. They'll take your position. And I'll have to move on. So, similarly, we hope you're going into this next phase of life. We're going to be a nurse, a millionaire, accountant, I think. Two accountants here. Engineer, I'm sorry. And we hope you enjoy your time in that career. But there's obviously lots of other things you'll do, lots of other people you'll have to help, and that you can be aware enough of your own motivations to save yourself.